Welcome to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest is Mickey Huff. I'm delighted to have Mickey. And Mickey gave me some fabulous news this morning. I don't want to preempt him, but I do like to introduce my guest properly, so let me proceed to do it. Mickey is a California-based professor of history at Diablo Valley College, and a very big N in capital letters. He is the new director of Project Censet, and another A&D in caps, and director of the Media Freedom Foundation. The Media Freedom Foundation supports First Amendment freedoms. Are there any more important than that? I haven't found them, because without those, we don't have much of a chance for anything else, anything else. It also does investigative research, and it works closely with Project Censet and other media-related organizations. Anybody who listens to this program knows what Project Censet is all about. It's the Media Democracy Advocacy Group, publishes vital news stories, suppressed dissent in the corporate media, you know that, and every year it ranks the top 25 stories, publishes them in its yearbook, Censored, Media Democracy in Action. The new Censored 2000 edition is out. It can be bought, and I strongly recommend it. It can be bought at the Project Censored website under projectcensored.org/store. Mickey, congratulations and a warm welcome this morning. What wonderful
news.
Thanks
so much. Thanks so much, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to be on with you, and thanks again for your well wishes and the beautiful introduction.
Oh, well, we always need good news. And you gave me some fabulous news this morning. I hated to preempt you, but
yeah,
not
at all.
I'll let you fill in some of the details.
It's just been a long, it's been a long couple of years at the project. We've been going through a lot of changes, and as you know, Peter Phillips was stepping into new roles at the Media Freedom Foundation, and I was an interim there and filled in for him at Project Censored during a shift over, and the short end of the story is that after the last year or so of some transitions, I was voted in by the Media Freedom Foundation to be the new director over this weekend, and we are moving forward on 2011, and Peter and I are also moving forward on the truth emergency issues that we've been talking about for well over a year now, and so this is something that we're moving forward with. We are growing the project as an international entity. Peter just got back from Project Censored Germany. We have universities in Bolivia, Ecuador. We are in communication with some universities even in China. And we have over 20 actively participating universities and colleges within the United States that are doing media research, investigative research, validated independent news work, that they professors and students are backing up the research of these kinds of important and crucial stories that we all need to know about, that all your listeners know the corporate media won't report about because it conflicts with their interest of profit and maintaining the status quo.
Boy, is that ever the truth. A break, Mickey, as you know. I wonder, are there any universities in Chicago? Well, is there a university in Chicago involved?
Not at present, but I can.
Oh, we got to get one
when we come back.
We got to get one. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Mickey Huff. Mickey, one quick comment. I'm aware of four Chicago colleges that have radio stations. that at times put on some wonderful programming, not enough. And it's been so long since I've listened, I'm not really up to date on what their schedules are. Mm-hmm. But I do know in the past they have had some programs that are the type that really put out good information. The problem is what comes down from the top. The school's administrators don't necessarily go along with what the kids want to do. And from time to time, I hear some flack. I really go at the kids to get rid of their programming and stick to the straight and narrow. And I must add one more thing, too. I've only been interviewed on one Chicago radio station, a University of Chicago station, that has a very small reach. From where I live, north of the Chicago River, University of Chicago is south of the river. It's way beyond my ability to pick them up, so I can't even listen to the station. And they're all low power, so the audience that they reach is pretty low. But the kids, I would imagine, are very much on the side of media democracy. The administrators are the problem.
Yeah, that's often the case. And any connections you have to any colleges or universities in and around Chicago, by all means, I can send people to the MediaFreedomInternational.org website that we have erected that talks about our affiliates program. And we're always looking for more affiliates, and it's not a type of a research program that professors or students have to engage in all year round or every semester or every quarter. But we have over 50 people on our affiliates roster, and right now we have about 20 that I said that were active. For that means for this cycle, in this current term. But it's just an invitation. It's an invitation for students to be part of media democracy. It's an invitation for people to become media literate. It's an invitation to participate in our own communities, in our own society, and in our own lives, frankly. And, I mean, you know, we have just a very quick list. We have a professor from Niagara University, from DePauw, SUNY Potsdam. We have Cal State Northridge. Of course, we have Sonoma State, Diablo Valley College, St. Cloud in Minnesota. We have San Francisco State University, University of Alaska Fairbanks, Muhlenberg College in Pennsylvania. Just give you a smattering of some of those. And we're always looking for more people to come and, you know, people that really are interested in this mission. And if colleges, universities, and institutions of higher education, you know, can't really be used to produce valuable information that the society at large can use, the general populace, then, you know, they're only serving more elite agendas in the long haul, particularly when it comes to things like the social sciences, communications, journalism, historiography, and the like. And, you know, we believe that, you know, public intellectuals serve a very crucial purpose in a free society, and we're always on the call for more of these people that want to step up and, really live the capital C citizen role. You know, the highest role in our free society and a democracy is that of the citizen, not the CEO, not the president, not the Supreme Court. It's the citizen, you know, and we the people are often lulled or duped or made to feel irrelevant or on the outside. And every couple few years, whenever there's an election, we're invited to participate, in what the elite agendas happen to be. And then we're told to kind of go away and shop and watch the Super Bowl and, you know, these kind of things. And democracy can't function under those conditions. It's an illusion. In fact, Christopher Hedges talks all about that illusion in his new book, Empire of Illusion, The End of Literacy and the Triumph of Spectacle. I may have mentioned it before, but, you know, it really encapsulates the work of a lot of really well-respected media scholars and cultural studies people over the years. And it really sums up a lot of the current conditions and problems we have in the United States with our society, just period. As, of course, does Censored 2010, which lays out a lot of these problems. And, of course, one of your other guests, David Matheson, Be the Media, he lays out a lot of things that we can do about it. And so we're into understanding the problems, and we're into finding creative and proactive solutions for them. And together, we can do that, and you provide a really wonderful platform for us to really talk about those issues. And so you're part of this effort too, Stephen, and we wanted to thank you for that.
Well, it's my number one issue, Mickey. Unless people know what's going on, there's no way they can realize the harm that's being done to them and then begin to think about the things they have to do to protect themselves. I must say Republic Broadcasting is on this too. You heard the Birdcage commercial during the break.
Oh, of course.
Oh, they have another one where they talk about the garbage on the corporate media. And my follow-up comment always is, I wish it were just garbage. I mean it's replete with garbage. And, of course, you call it junk food news.
Right, that's garbage.
Carl Jensen,
they do more
junk,
than that.
Junk food news. Garbage suits me just fine. But it really is all the distractions. Super Bowl, of course, a major one. And the endless propaganda. And even the best, I hate to use the word best, the best of the worst when it comes to the people who deliver so-called news to the major media channels. They are absolutely abysmal. They do nothing to report the most important stuff. The most important stuff doesn't even get reported. Or when it does, it's so grossly distorted, and the whys are never answered, and nobody can possibly understand anything by following anything on the major news channels.
No, I'm afraid that is an accurate assessment. But you know, the more people become aware that this is the condition of corporate media, then the more we're empowered to try to seek out other forms and other sources of investigative reporting and accurate information. And of course, at Media Freedom International, we're doing that with Validated and Independent News. We're now reporting once a week with Flashpoints Radio at KPFA. These undercovered stories, so we're now getting out on one of the major Pacifica radio stations every week with this. You know, we have a lot of students researching these stories and getting a lot of these stories, you know, out there. So real investigative journalists are being heard and being amplified more, as you'd hope they would be, in the major corporate media structure. But again, the corporate media structure has another interest. They're not interested necessarily in telling the truth or informing the public accurately about certain issues. Their purpose is to keep people in line with the agendas of the power elite. And not only, and this is actually pretty interesting, I wanted to bring this up today. We were talking in one of my critical thinking classes. I have a class that's all about the role that corporate media play in the construction of the recent past, how history is recorded, and how media continues to distort history and use mythology. And of course, I've written about this on 9/11 and a host of other issues in the past. But there was a study done not long ago, published in the Journal of Sociological Inquiry, and it was called "There Must Be a Reason: Osama, Saddam, and Inferred Justification." And it's an interesting study that looked back at the 2004 election and why so many Americans saw the link between Saddam Hussein and the terrorist attacks of 9/11 and the impact that had on their role in the voting booth. By the way, that shouldn't circumvent the facts of the matter that the 2004 election had literally millions of votes switch sides, and you know, Steve Freeman at MIT from MIT and University of Pennsylvania has done those studies and so forth. But this study in particular by Dr. Steve Hoffman, he's a professor at University of Buffalo. What he's showing is that the facts for most people are completely ignored, you know, and people ignore contrary information. People tend to see a current situation and then try to find out, like, well, why, for example, why are we in the Iraq war? Well, we're in the Iraq war, so therefore there must be a good reason to be in the Iraq war. And the argument here then is that people get deeply attached to their beliefs. And it's this conflict between beliefs and facts in the real world. And of course, Peter's written about this with Andy Hobbs in Censor 2010 on the issue of hyperreality that was talked about, you know, going back to Baudrillard, how we live in a world increasingly, because of the blurred lines created by the ubiquitous mass media, that people can't tell the difference between what is real and what is made up or what is fictitiously projected upon us. And why Hoffman refers to this as this process of believing what we want regardless of facts, he calls inferred justification. And Hoffman says, because these voters that went and voted for Bush because of this issue of the Iraq war, the sheer fact that we were engaged in a war led to a post hoc search for a justification for that war. People were basically making up justifications after the fact because they couldn't reconcile it. It goes along with the mythology that, well, America doesn't just go and attack people willy-nilly. America only defends its interests and defends itself when it's attacked. And if we're attacking Iraq, then it must be because Iraq was behind 9/11. Now, couple that with the unending parade of pundits and politicians that continuously linked Saddam Hussein to 9/11, regardless that there were no facts to support that claim, and regardless of the fact that it was refuted. This is pretty amazing. But Hoffman suggests in this study that people wanted to find a link because it helped them make sense of current reality. And Hoffman believes that's a little more to do with personal internal beliefs, but he does suggest that media is a part of it. I suggest that media is at least an equal part of it and potentially even more a part of it, because that's over 70% of Americans go to corporate media to get their information. And if all you see is images of Saddam Hussein and the towers falling, and people make these connections. You know, it wasn't until after the 2004 election that when Bush was asked about the connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11, he finally said, no, there isn't one. But all the way on the run-up to that, he would routinely mention those things in the same sentence, and so did other politicians, and so did many pundits. And for anyone to suggest otherwise and defy the conventional wisdom, they were called a traitor, an American, and that just leads to more problems for we in a free society.
Well, indeed, Mickey, and the power of repetition. The bigger the lie and the more it's repeated, the easier it is to get so many people to believe it.
You bet.
And it's shocking. No matter how many times they fool Mickey, we can come back again and again and just keep fooling them, the great majority. Another break. Let's take it and we'll come right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back, talking about everything from truth emergencies to media democracy, to what Project Censored and the Media Freedom Foundation are around to do for us. And again, Mickey, this is so central, and it seems that the older I get, nothing changes no matter what administration is in power. And we have really plunged more rapidly than ever in my lifetime over the last decade to new depths. And it shocks me to think what possibly can be ahead, unless enough people begin realizing we really have a very dire situation on our hands, and it is affecting them deeply, and we need to get involved, we need to get informed, we need to realize that unless we do something ourselves, this will continue to deteriorate, and us and our families and loved ones will be gravely harmed. I have never seen a situation like this in my lifetime, as grave as it is now. During World War II, I was too young to understand what was going on. But if I did, I would have realized that we had things well in hand and just relax and enjoy things.
Yeah, well, before the break, you know, you really nailed this idea of repetition in media. And no matter how absurd or ludicrous or, you know, just groundless a particular precept or idea or notion happens to be, the more it's repeated and the more people see it in a particular medium of mass technology, you know, Marshall McLuhan, the media is the medium is the message, the more people just sort of accept it, and it becomes part of their fabric, you know. And it reminded me, of course, of the then President Bush in 2002, when he mangled the quote. He was saying, there's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, can't get fooled again. Of course, the real saying is, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. But, you know, in America, we really should have a lot of shame on us, in large part, because we have a system that steadily feeds Americans diets of junk food, news, and garbage, as we discussed. And when it comes to critical matters of policy, there's just gross distortion, and debates are manufactured out of thin air. You know, like the phony debate in corporate media about habeas corpus rights over the last few years. You know, do we have them? And it's like, well, it says we do in the Constitution. So, you know, where are the strict constructionists standing up and saying this is not a debate? This is ludicrous. Suspending people's rights of due process is a complete gross violation of law and should be an impeachable offense. And if you start looking around for these problems, Unfortunately and sadly, as you know, you really, really do find many of them. And finding the problems, of course, and understanding them is the first step, but it's never the last. You know, it shouldn't be something that people go into their cocoons about. It should be, you know, people then should be going out and looking for alternate sources of information, like on the ProjectCensored.org personal news network, the Media Freedom Independent News and Analysis pages. I mean, that's just one place to start. We have over 50 news stories a day, RSS feeds. I say this to people often, and I'm not saying it's the best place or the only place or whatever. I'm simply saying that a lot of people ask the question, well, I just don't know what to do. I don't know who to trust. I don't even know where to start. And particularly the Internet is, you know, has that needle in a haystack phenomenon. So yeah, go there. Just go to the ProjectCensored.org website, the PNN links, and take a look at our stories from a whole host of places all around, including from Global Research on the analysis page and so forth. Again, it's an invitation. It's an invitation for people for participation. And we were just, you know, when I was just talking a minute ago about the study that Stephen Hoffman did, you know, it really comes to some interesting conclusions about the kind of society we live in and how we are losing our ability to think critically. That, of course, assumes we had any. But we're certainly not developing any more adept skills at critical thinking and analysis as a society. And the further we've become more distracted and inundated with things that don't matter and continue debating things that are not debatable, then we're going to have a lot of problems. You know, it's really just that simple.
Boy, we sure have great problems now. The media drums into our heads that the worst of the economic times are over and recovery is on the way, and that is absolute rubbish, absolute rubbish. Anybody listening to this program knows. Well, an array of economists I've had on this program have explained very clearly that we are not recovering. We are in a dark time. It's going to go on for years and years and years.
Well, between Michael Hudson,
the only issue is just how bad is it going to get? How
between
many
Michael Hudson,
will be hurt how badly?
Yeah, between Michael Hudson and Dean Baker, I mean, even occasionally Krugman will kind of crack through. Stiglitz, I mean, there's people even in more of what would be called the corporate mainstream press that are just shaking their heads and saying, you know, I mean, even to be cautiously optimistic is almost folly, according to some of these people. But I mean, if you want to get the real nitty-gritty of it, I mean, you've got some of these people coming down your road on your show. And, you know, I can honestly say this is, you know, interesting from my perspective. Personally, we just went through a process of trying to buy, you know, a home in the incredibly inflated California real estate market. And despite the fact that the markets are depressed and so on, and we can look at that metaphorically too, but we'll hold on to that for a minute, that, you know, when I'm speaking to my realtor in these people, they're like, well, there's so many foreclosed homes that the bank's holding on to because if they let them go on the market, the whole system will collapse. And there are proposed, basically, projected is the correct word, there's projected to be even more foreclosures this year than last. And where these people are going to go, and people still can't afford these homes. I'm afraid you're right about that too, Stephen, but the corporate media won't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Mickey. Another break. All that inventory is called the shadow inventory.
That's right.
Oh, you're
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Mickey, I always frown when, and you made the comment, when people wonder, you know, I'm just one person, what can I do? But it's very easy for people connected online to get informed. You don't have to be an expert. By God, I'm no expert. Every time I write something, I learn new stuff. I swear every single time. And I have the urge that I want to pass this on to other people. So it's easy to get informed. It's easy to realize how we're being harmed. And I keep wondering, scratching my head, and I hope I see it in my lifetime, when will enough people realize the gravity of the harm and get angry enough to act? And I mean really act, not just moan and complain, because that does nothing. I condemn violence. but I strongly support civil disobedience, and I must say that there has never been a major change in this country that did not involve a lot of civil disobedience. The most recent one in my memory, a lot of people listening to this program will certainly remember it, the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the anti-war, anti-Vietnam War movement. These were powerful. People were out there risking life and limb sometimes. And, well, the Vietnam War finally ended. Took long enough. We got some civil rights, now greatly eroded again, sad to say. But this is the way change comes. This is the only way that we're going to get rid of this effective one-party monopoly, you know, the duopoly that's really a monopoly with two wings. We need real change, the kind that we have not seen, maybe have never seen in this country. But unless we get that, the phrase, Mickey, I've used it, I think, with you a number of times on the air, this country is headed on a path to become Guatemala, and we're well along the way now. It will not be pretty when we reach the final destination. It's not pretty now.
Well, you know, Gore Vidal, recently remarked that, you know, we're well on our way to Argentina, you know, in the 70s in particular and so forth. And of course, he was attacked by Christopher Hitchens, and we won't get into that sidebar. But, you know, it is always the case that when someone has a prescient and prophetic vision that is actually only reading the obvious, he or she is attacked with great vitriol by defenders of the power elite. You know, that's part of the whole process of media and distortion. Shoot the messenger, attack the messenger, change the subject, erect the straw person to tear down and distract. And again, illusion is it. When you were talking about shadow inventory, we've got a pseudo intellectual culture. We have a, you know, shadow intellectual pundits, a shadow expertise. You know, we have this cult of phony expertise. When people sit down to watch, you know, the corporate nightly news, they get a parade of former Pentagon generals to talk about the war and everything else. I mean, what do you think these people are going to say? What do you think their frame and their angle is? Of course they're going to give it to you the way that the Pentagon wants them to give it. And this has been going on for a long time in our country's history. But quite frankly, as you illustrated earlier, and as we've been saying, unfortunately, at Project Censored, is the problem is growing. It's getting worse. I mean, Peter and I were just talking over the weekend, and one of the things we were talking about is that the book is getting too big.
too big.
The annual book is getting too big.
I love it. I love it. I mean, there's so much in it. It's a great reference book, Mickey. I mean, you don't have to necessarily read it exactly the way you read another book, but I bet you can read it. You can go back and refer to stuff. It's a wonderful reference book.
Hey, for $20, you know, you can have a tome in your hand that you can flip to at any given time, and you can read a given series of pages or paragraphs, and you're guaranteed to start a ruckus somewhere. You're guaranteed to push someone's critical thinking switch and say, hey, maybe this isn't the gospel truth from on high, but it appears that this information is factual and is not being widely discussed, and we need more of this kind of information coming into our discourse, you know. And again, when we were talking about this study earlier about how people have this inferred justification and they tend to defer to their own beliefs that are formed through conditioning and through media and institutions and so on, again, that all is deferential to the power elite. That is not empowering necessarily of the individual. You know, Thomas Frank wrote the book not long ago, What's the Matter with Kansas? You know, talking about, you know, how people are somehow duped into or led into, if duped is too powerful of a word, voting even against their own interests. Or again, as we've been talking about, people feel immobilized. And again, the antidote to the immobilization is simply fueling yourself with the kind of information and transparent fact-based information that gives people the empowerment to stand up and say, well, as you know, Howard Beale said in the 1976 film, you know, Network, you know, I'm not going to take it. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And anger is not an end in itself, but it can be a vehicle for people to really produce positive change. And, you know, it's also the case, I know there's the Tea Partiers and so forth and people on the right, you know, but there's an interesting part of some of their their otherwise peculiar slogan earring. And you know, like, you can keep the change. You know, I'll keep my guns and my money, and you can keep the change, kind of thing. I'm not going to harp on the first part of that. But there is a sense in the American public that the media is capitalizing on, and right-wing think tanks and so forth are. And that's what Obama came in promising, a whole host of things that he has completely retreated from. I mean,
true.
I mean, now, granted, you know, some of us didn't believe they were ever going to happen all along. And, you know, maybe it's cynical, but the American history of electioneering shows that people say a lot of things to get elected. You know, kind of like people say a lot of things to get in bed, or people say a lot of things to get embedded further into the system. You're not going to be president of the United States if you're not in bed with Wall Street. And granted, you won't be in the master bedroom, but you'll be in the servants' quarters, because that's exactly what the president of the United States is, a servant to the powerful, a figurehead to the banking industry, to the transnational corporations. The Supreme Court is now basically just handing the corporations the keys to empire right out in public and claiming that it's entirely legitimate and illegal. You know, once upon a time, you know, we had people like Smedley Butler, you know, the most decorated Marine in American history in the 1930s, writing a book called War is a Racket, you know, how he was a gangster for capitalism. You know, once upon a time, we actually had people in power that, despite their servants to their service to the elite, they understood that there was a balance between the people and the powerful, and sometimes the people actually had the power and were the powerful. You know, and for all his faults, Franklin Roosevelt understood some of those things. I'm certainly not going to go on any kind of fawning tribute here. He had a lot of things that we could get into that were seriously problematic, including his tyranny of reform. But now it seems that reform is just a buzzword that everybody uses to pretend like something's getting done. Again, the illusion of progress. And this is why Peter and I were talking so much about this truth emergency issue, from campaign finance reform. I mean, look, the truth is the American government has been for sale for ages. I mean, it's pretty amazing the things that go on in Congress and between lobbyists. I mean, these might as well be akin to traitorous acts. They're all legalized as, you know, we call it lobbying. It's legalized bribery. Deregulation has wrecked most of everything that we've tried to protect coming out of the Great Depression, but yet it's called the deregulation, and the free markets are somehow religious or holy words in American politics and the American media. Anybody that challenges them is akin to a heretic. The health care issue, you know, people talking about death panels and on. How we can't have an honest conversation in this country and say, like, people deserve the right to life, people deserve the right to health care. I mean, if you think that's radical, then you're really exposing yourself as an anti-human humanitarian monster that you really are. Education, another area here where people, just in my neighborhood, they closed two to three schools in the past year. They're downsizing at the college now we're in. That's the clever word for, you know, basically disrespecting education, disrespecting educators, and not trying to serve students to help them achieve, you know, the mythical American dream that the other administrators and media and the government are constantly telling people they can achieve. Meanwhile, No Child Left Behind is busy dismantling the educational structure so fast that the only thing you're going to have coming out of American schools are widget makers, drones, automatons. You know, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see critical thinking curricula vanish over the course of the next decade due to things like student learning outcomes, you know, where you have to sort of – everything has to be measurable. Everything has to be quantifiable. Creativity and intelligence isn't always quantifiable by linear means. And this is another – because, again, it's this tyranny of these standards and the lack of challenging of any of these standards in our society. And I know that a lot of people listening and a lot of people – out in the hinterlands of America, in their suburban cul-de-sacs and elsewhere, you know, they feel this. They know something's wrong. But since they don't necessarily have the vehicles to try to see and understand it, we're crippling ourselves with this, you know, with these educational reforms to create fewer critical thinkers. This is what attracts people to these tea parties. This is what attracts people to these kinds of falsely hopeful movements of change. And I will argue that just as many people on the Obama side of the camp drank the same Kool-Aid. You know, this, if this is not addressed, this major issue of our culture of illusion, If this is not addressed and rectified, I'm sad to say I'm 39. You know, in my own lifetime, Stephen, I think that we're going to be doomed. And I'm a very hopeful person. And I'm doing everything I can to try to rectify this informational deficit. And I know
I feel exactly the same way. And I can remember the way I was brought up and grew up. My earliest memories from the late 1930s, I had no knowledge that there was a Great Depression on. I certainly was very aware of World War II. I didn't realize, I was too young to realize just what a monstrous war that was. But members of my family were in it. My father was in World War I in France. Thankfully, he came back in one piece, so you and I wouldn't be on air together right now. Throughout my early years, my education, it was a different world than today. You talk about dismantling schools, privatizing public education. My God, I was educated in inner city schools, the kind that absolutely do not give an education today. Why? The good jobs are shipped overseas. We don't need to educate the people for the kind of jobs that they're going to be able to get when they get through with whatever year of education they have, knowing absolutely nothing, being half illiterate, no computer skills, no nothing. Sure, they can go out and get cheap service jobs, but it was different when I grew up. It's a different world, and it's very scary, and young people especially should be very worried that this is what they can look forward to unless they do something about it. It's one thing after another, Mickey.
This is also what creates more alienation among people and youthful people who generally are more innately hopeful, or depending on where they are, who they are, and where they're growing up. If the commercial media wasn't so hell-bent on this be the best you can be through competition and material wealth gain, and the more things you have, the more toys you own, the better your life is, this leads to the exact opposite of creating human happiness. And so we're training people at a very young age to pursue paths that will lead to emptiness, that will lead to a lack of self-empowerment because people will not have the tools to understand the things that are happening around them. And even though this is a compounded problem over the 20th century, come on, Aldous Huxley was writing about this quite a long time ago in Brave New World.
He sure did. One of the first books I ever read as a freshman in college, thinking
of
myself.
Boy, I'll bet over the course of your lifetime, the manifestation of the concepts of that book, you know, has to be particularly alarming.
Well, Mickey, at the time, I said to myself, well, thank God this is just a novel. I would hate to live in a world like this.
Yeah, well, it's turned
well,
out
to little
be
little evil, and of course, 1984, more people know about that. I mean, he really envisioned the future, but I wish he were around today, and he would say, I'm sure he would say something like, my God, it's even worse than I imagined.
You know, if your readers are interested, I'm sorry, your listeners are interested, there's a book that came out a couple years ago that's really interesting that looks at Orwell, and it's called What Orwell Didn't Know. And it's a compilation of essays sort of looking at like Orwell's framework and context and analysis, and then it blows it up into the present and says, well, hey, Orwell would never have known how to handle this or deal with this because this is how much things have gone off the rails. It's a really interesting examination of Orwellian thought and the late 20th, early 21st century. Called What Orwell Didn't Know. So, I mean, if your listeners are interested in that topic, I would strongly urge they check that out.
Oh, indeed. Well, he died, my goodness gracious. Over
half a century ago.
Oh, yeah, in 1950. I just looked it up. January 21st, 1950. My God, the Korean War hadn't even begun yet. I mean, we were in the quiet time. The interregnum between World War II and the continuation of endless wars. And even that interregnum, I mean, there were all kinds of wars going on that the U.S. was involved in Africa, you know, countries fighting to end colonialism and things like that.
It hasn't stopped. We've been, and I mean, I know Haiti has been in the news for the tremendous tragedy that's happened there.
Oh, it obsesses me, Mickey.
But what's not being reported, of course, is the long history of imperialism, U.S. meddling, the support of ruthless and brutal dictators that killed countless Haitians, that's destroyed their economy and their resources. It's not just an earthquake that has come and devastated these people, which is the tangibly manifest problem of the present. But Haiti was in dire straits, you know, for much of the 20th century, and it had to do a lot with U.S. involvement. You know, over the first several decades of the 20th century, the United States had invaded Haiti and tried to control the resources and meddled in their politics and supported their brutal dictators, Papa Doc, et cetera, all, you know, in the latter part of the 20th century. But if you watch corporate media and the earthquake issues, all you hear about is how the army is going to go save the day and how, you know, the mercenary, we'll send the mercenary killers to go help the struggling. This whole militarization of catastrophe and then the whole notion of profiteering off of people's suffering and this whole disaster capitalism idea that Naomi Klein talks about. You're hard-pressed to find that being discussed in the corporate mainstream media anywhere. You'll see endless trumpeting, however, of the Red Cross, where, you know, vast percentage of donations that go to the Red Cross go right to their bureaucracy and their ad campaigns and not actually to helping people. But, yeah, it's this illusion. You know, it's like the allegory of the cave. You know, you can take this all the way back to Plato. We see the flickering shadows on the wall. It's American Idol. It's the Super Bowl. If one of us gets out of the cave, we're blinded by the light. We're blinded by knowledge. We're blinded by reason. We run back in the cave to tell others. And, boy, if we don't get hammered and play the shoot the messenger game because people are saying, my God, now you've told me things that are going on that I have to consider and think about if I'm a human being with a conscience and I can't go back to the dark days of the cave.
And people should know what's going on in places like Haiti because what's happening there may be heading for this country as well. Haitians have suffered for over 500 years.
Yeah.
The worst of what's coming here is ahead unless we do something about it. One more break, Mickey. Final segment, and we'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. Final segment with Mickey Huff. Oh, Mickey, this has been a powerful hour. So much that you said just resonates so strongly. We need you in front of a crowd, thousands, inspiring them and really getting them to understand the things that you're saying. This is what we really need to marshal people, really to get up and really want to do something. And if we had it, I think they would begin to do it. Can I throw one comment at you?
Please.
And then I'll let you finish up.
Sure.
He may be right. You know the future watcher, Gerald Celente. He has a wonderful comment where he says, and he thinks it's not far off in the future. He says that when people lose everything and they have nothing more to lose, they lose it. In other words, that's when the ruckus is going to start. And he really believes it's coming. So, and he's been very good in his predictions. So, we watch and we wait and we see whether it really will happen.
You know, I hope it doesn't come to that, but I understand as an historian some of the cycles of history. And, of course, as Mark Twain said, you know, history may not repeat itself, but it seems to rhyme. You know, I just wanted to take a minute and expand on that and wrap up the show with at least one bit of hope that came from someone who passed recently, and we can learn a lot from his example, and that was the historian Howard Zinn. I've used Howard Zinn's work in my classes for years, people's history and so forth, and the way his death was treated in the media also was a continued attack that even when the man is dead, if they're not ignoring him, they're kicking his views. And Howard wrote the people's history. He really helped change historiography in a way, and others were too, but Howard really broke through, you know, in this discipline, this relatively conservative discipline of history and power elite histories, and says, no, it's the people. It's our history. It's our country. It's our democracy, and it's our responsibility to maintain it and to ward off those that are enemies, foreign or domestic. And our domestic enemies have long been more problematic in some cases than the foreign ones. And I don't mean the socialists and the anarchists. Those were people that helped create more of the equality sentiments of our society. I'm talking about the banksters. I'm talking about the politicians. I'm talking about the corporate media, you know. And Howard, who was a longtime supporter of Project Censored, which is another reason I wanted to bring him up and just, you know, just use the platform to thank Howard, not only for all of his work and inspiration that he's given me and many of my students over the years and so many others, but thank him for the support of Project Censored and for a vigorous free press and a real debate in this country generated by the people, for the people, where we can come to a direction where we create the society that some of the founders in this country said we could. And Jefferson said it best, every generation has to have its own revolution. And perhaps that may become more and more of a literal possibility the less people actually have.
Well, indeed, Mickey. And mentioning Howard Zinn, very important. I had him on my programs a few times. I miss him greatly. The last time was last fall. And
right.
Even though he was 87 years old, he was in top form. He sounded the way he did 30 years ago.
You know, Howard died swimming laps in a pool at 87.
Yeah.
If I can do that, then I think I'll have a good run.
I feel the same way. I want to die with my boots on. I used to swim. I don't do it anymore. Doing my morning exercise, as long as somebody knows that I'm not showing up as usual or whatever and come looking for me, I wonder about that stuff. Maybe we're out of time.
Right.
Oh, it was great. It was
Thanks
great.
You
and I are going to have a conversation. I'll get right on that as soon as I take a little John break.
My
great
you.
Thanks.
As
Join
always.
Us again tomorrow. Make this a daily habit. We will be back tomorrow.